You are listening to the Pungus podcast. I'm back from Vegas, but we're going to talk about that next week or the week after. I did see No Doubt, and they were awesome. We're here with Emore. Emore, what's happening?
Hello. Yeah, lots of writing stuff. Lots of stuff's going to be coming out soon, so it's very exciting.
And we're here with Soft Palms, which of course is Julia of the Coat Hangers and Scott of the Growlers. We had Julie on before. Julie's awesome. I'm sure we haven't met him yet, but I'm sure Scott's cool. So, Soft Palms, thanks for coming on. This is very exciting.
Thank you so much. Good to be back.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to meet you both.
Soft
Nice
Palms
to
have a
meet you.
brand new record coming out. It's called In Echo. It's out on June 12th. There's three tracks released so far, and they also have a book coming out. Actually, already about called How to Be Self-Reliant in the Music Business. We're going to talk about both those, but we're going to kick it off with a track. Let us kick it off with, oh, this track is pretty cool. The environmental thinking track, Garbage in the Sand. Julian Scott, Garbage in the Sand. It's got sort of an eco-conscious kind of spin to it. Why is that what we want to kick the album off with? Why is that something we're thinking about?
Well, I think when I was writing the lyrics, I didn't think about it being really earth related, but it was just me feeling like a piece of trash. But then when I stepped back from it, I realized it is something very important to us, like not trashing the planet as something I value. So it just happens, art imitates life, imitates art kind of thing. That's what happened.
You know, you were saying you feel like trash, and I've addressed this theme with artists a few times before. I don't see how Julia of Soft Palms, Julia of the Coat Hangers, Julia of White Fence feels like trash, because the third and final time I saw Coat Hangers, it was Punk Rock Bowling, and you came out and said, "We're the Coat Hangers from Georgia or Atlanta, Georgia, or whatever." And the crowd, the Punk Rock Bowling crowd probably wasn't super familiar with the Coat Hangers, and you guys played like a 20-minute set and you demolished the crowd, and I think ended up crowd surfing, and that like blew
Yes.
everybody away. So how does that person feel like trash? What are you feeling trash about?
Well, I don't know. People can get you down, events. I think, the political climate can really get you down and feeling like kind of helpless, like, just floating out there like a piece of garbage in the sand, 'cause there's a lot of sand granules out there to be like part of it, in the middle of it, but not being able to do anything. I think we can all relate, maybe.
So you, as trash, we're saying we feel not inherently bad, but unable to do anything and just floating along the water like a plastic bag or something. Is that what you're
Yeah,
saying?
something like that.
Well, how are you feeling now?
Better. But, I'm feeling good today, but I think that's why it's like relatable, because you just never know. Some days you feel good, some days you feel like a piece of plastic.
And actually, that's great. I'm gonna throw this off to Scott. I love the Bad Brains. I'm not so much big on the Youth Crew stuff, but they're always like positive mental attitude. Always be positive. Being positive is the only way to live life. And sometimes you feel bad, and sometimes you feel negative. And I feel if you ignore that, you're really only pushing it down. What I'm saying is PMA is a good guide, but not the ultimate guide. Scott, where do you stand?
About being able to feel bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to accept the way you feel. There's some really tragic situations happening kind of right now, and it's kind of like, man, you gotta I don't know. It just happens, and you have to ride it out, and you have to try not to make the problem with feeling bad, though, is that you tend to want to fix it like now, and then make decisions to try to fix it, like really impulsive decisions. And it's like sometimes you just gotta kind of wait it out, let the shock kind of subside, and with let the dust settle so you can think a little clearer. I mean, depending on the situation.
And eventually, maybe be positive.
Yeah, and eventually see the positive in it, because like Julia was saying, art, like it's becoming more and more apparent just kind of what like art is. You're taking something shitty, usually, and you're being a transducer, which is a something that turns one form of energy into another form of energy, and transducing into something positive. Like every song, "Garbage in the Sand" is about something not good being churned into something good.
Well, along those lines is the new. I've heard three tracks in the new album. We're going to play all three officially released tracks tonight. It sounds real good. What struck me most is it's kind of harder edged, more sharper. The previous ones kind of had this glossy sound, and the last record I really liked it had this one song that I compared to Rolling Stones, not Heaven, the Jam song from Tattoo You, whichever song that was. No, Can't You Hear Me Knocking? I'm Sticky Fingers. That's what I compared it to. And so
Sick.
kind of had like this kind of funky, smooth groove. The new one's got kind of a harder edge. Is that by design? Is that just what happened? Why is the new one kind of snappier, almost new wavy to a degree?
Oh, dude. I think from the guitar and writing standpoint, as far as lyrically, the other one was written in pre-COVID. So this is post-pandemic, and this kind of the feelings that came along with it and living through the past 5 years. So I think intentionally or not even or accidentally, it just evolved. The sound evolved, and the kind of music and the kind of statements we wanted to make weren't just I got a little bit angrier. Me personally, I don't know about Scott, you.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of energy. We've been getting pretty guys charged up the last 5 years, and this is the result of that. It's kind of, I don't think that we could have made just another mellow album. Maybe we can in the future, but this one was just, it just didn't seem like the right time for that either. like the songs were just, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like the right time to put out something warm and fuzzy just yet, I guess.
When people talk about like crass or maybe bad religion or even Dead Kennedys, people are like political politics. They talk about politics. I don't know if that's what I would necessarily do, firstly associate with coat hangers or the growlers. Who actually, I'm talking about a growler show in a second. How much of a direct political view should we view Soft Palms through? You know what I mean? Like, are we saying this is what we're talking about, or is that just one of the pieces floating around in the melange? Perhaps more like, you know. The Bad Brains, for example. Not every Bad Brains song is political by any means, you know.
Well, the personal is political, and so whatever our experiences have been, I think it translates into a political statement. The same thing with the coat hangers always had been, even though we none of the songs were directly against or pro anything,
Except for fuck the NRA.
except for the NRA. But yeah.
Just that one.
I'll just let you handle the rest of that.
Well, it's not just the band. That's the thing. Like, it's not just Julia Julia, Soft Palms, or the Growlers. Like, we do the Happy Sundays, the free music festival. We have the nonprofit called Studios for Schools. We wrote the book, How to Try to Help People Get the Royalties. Like, the chapter on royalties is free online. Like, there's a political. There's some politics in the songs. We did everything ourselves, trying to set an example that of self-reliance and that people can do things on their own, and we get to that kind of time where you kind of have to, if you want a chance, like, at all in music. And it's kind of got political subtext more than actually coming out and saying, yeah, Trump fucking sucks, everything about this guy sucks. Not saying like that directly, but just kind of indirect, more of like a, you know, the more you dig into it, the more kind of inspired hopefully you'll be to kind of be cool to everyone and learn things.
What's the Soft Palm song creation process like? Do you guys just sit there and jam around? Does someone come up with, I got this song? How does that work? And how much internal fighting is there to make a song?
Well, just like start playing. Usually, every time we play, a lot of cool stuff happens. That is one of the biggest gifts, I guess, from that Julia has. And every time that we sit down, we have like another album ready to go, pretty much, just because of a bunch of demos we've made and stuff. So it's kind of like it seems like everything that happens is cool.
There's a lot of jamming. I mean, it comes in different ways. Some songs, you know, come in and they're already written. However it happens, you know, we welcome it. But there's maybe just like frustration bickering. There's no fighting. Maybe just frustration bickering about like, no, not that part, the other part, you know, kind of dumb stuff like that.
Communication over labels of segments.
So the question is how important is conflict in creating art? Because famously, the Ramones fought from the very beginning. Black Flag pretty much fought from the very beginning. The Beach Boys surprisingly fought all the time in the studio. So is there a correlation between great music and conflict, or is that just a byproduct that isn't necessary? I'm trying to think who got along and makes great music. Hall and Oates, I guess, used to, but now they hate each other. So I don't know. Is there a correlation between fighting and good music?
I think if you're around someone like for long periods of time, then you're gonna bicker with them. And it all depends on how people handle their stress. Some people handle their stress by screaming, yelling, throwing things, and some people like get quieter. So there's gonna be conflict. There doesn't necessarily have to be fighting, you know?
Yeah, it's part of the creative process. It's just a collaboration. It's like, and that all depends on how much experience the people have collaborating. So it's if it's your first band or your first group project or your first time, I don't know, talking to a girl. Like, maybe there's like a for like, you know what I mean? Like, it all depends.
He's never been in a band with a woman before.
No, I haven't.
So I think
It
that
Is that important in that, like, from the creative aspect, from the creative, does that make a big difference? I asked Cassie Ramon one that question actually once of the Vivian Girls, and she says it makes a big difference.
I don't know. This is the first time I've ever thought about that, actually. I don't think so at all.
And this is the first time I was playing with someone else that was a male. So for me, I think there is a difference. I think women have their the energy is different when you're creating. And I can't really describe what it is. I think that maybe more emotion or something. So and like guys, I mean, but it's a generalization. It's all generalizations about based on my own experiences. So I'll just, yeah, I think it's a little bit different.
Scott mentioned collaboration. So I've got one more kind of abstract question, then a couple more concrete questions. But here's another spacey abstract question. Scott talked about collaboration. When it comes to music, especially like in the 90s, you would see like, I do art for me. I don't care if anybody buys my record. I do it just for me. Like very much the Kurt Cobain, you know. But then I interviewed Jesse Michaels of Operation Ivy, and he said, there certainly is an element of service in my music in that it's not just for him. So if the people want him to do a couple Operation Ivy songs, he's not going to do a whole Operation Ivy set, but he'll do a couple because that's what the people want and that's what will make them happy. And actually, I'm gonna cite Black Dahlia. This is one of my favorite quotes ever. He says, some people would say, and this is me paraphrasing a little bit, but not at the end. He says, if someone paints a picture and puts it in their house and never shows anybody, some people will say that's the purest form of art. But I say, quote, what the fuck is that? Because if no one is receiving it, then it's not even art at all, you know? So my question is, how important is service, if you will? How important is interaction and perception of the fan? When you're up there on stage, is it just for you? Or do you want to rock the crowd? That's the question.
I like if there's a crowd, I enjoy the interaction. I don't mind when there's no crowd. I don't mind playing to nobody, but it's a bummer when, like, people are just like on their phones and not interacting, not like there's no engagement. So I don't know if it's necessarily for someone or anyone, but it's not, it's like not the it, when the interaction is not there, that's when it's not as fun, I
Yeah, it's
guess.
practice.
Yeah, it's just,
You're just up there wanking off
yeah,
in front
pretty
of
much.
a you know? So yeah, I think and I've done like squeaky tiki before, you know, and it like in soft palm sets and stuff, and it's like super fun to yeah, to s get that reaction, the exchange, the otherwise we might as well do it over Zoom, you know, but 'cause you're there in person, you want to feel like an interaction. So yeah. I think definitely service is part of the music, you know, how we approach it.
Here's a concrete question. What does the song Radio mean to you?
Yeah, just like about losing all your friends, you know, and just kind of hearing it. There was a just hearing it through like a source, you know, like through someone else, and like kind of being shocked by that. And yeah, it's been a tough 5 years.
Do you
A
think those?
quadruple.
Oh, I was gonna say it means to me, it means a quadruple bounce.
So
It took
what
a
you're
long
saying
time.
is you had friends, but they kind of drifted away, and you heard through other people that you're really not friends anymore. So is that what you're
Yeah,
saying?
something like that. Yeah.
Why do you think, you know, I've got a theory here. It is, and I've had this problem multiple times, and actually, and then actually. Em, I'm going to pat myself on the back here. I'm going to do two things real quick. So first of all, I've had this problem a few times in my life. If someone's got a problem with you and you say, do you have a problem? Because if so, let's either work it out, or if we can't work it out, we'll just not be around each other. And the other person says there's no problem, but there is a problem, and they keep sniping at you, and you're like, I wanted to work this out or just not be around each other. Why you got to do that? Have you had that problem?
Yeah. Sometimes you can't help it. You're working with them. You know, like, yeah.
But do you think it's because people don't have the courage to say they've got a problem?
Because people don't like conflict. I mean, I probably have been that person on the other end as well. Because you don't know what that conflict resolution is going to look like. If is it going to be a peaceful talk or is it going to be like fucking mayhem? So
Scott,
I've been that
oh, I'm sorry.
person. Yeah. I don't know how you resolve it, but.
I prefer if there's going to be a conflict, I like to choose the ground that the conflict is going to be on and just do it and bash it out. And either you're not going to be friends anymore or you'll make it up. You know what I mean? You know,
Yeah,
that's
that's
the
true.
Italian way, but well, it's the American Italian way, not the Italy Italian way. They say everything's great. And then, you know, anyway, Scott, conflict. You like conflict? You don't like conflict? Montoya, is that Italian or not Italian?
It's not Italian. It's
Okay.
it's Latin, but not Italian. Spanish, Mexican.
So conflict. Where do you stand on conflict?
I don't know. I don't really like getting too upset about stuff. I guess it's just a case by case.
Scott,
Like
I feel you're a pretty easygoing guy. Is that true? Are you an easygoing guy?
with everyone except for myself.
I'm
But
gonna pat myself in the back here and show how the world how quote smart I think I am. I just got back from Vegas. In the airport, I bought Marco Aurelius's Meditations. The
nice.
core of the book is the following: if you don't have a problem with you, and someone else has a problem with you, that's their problem, not your problem. Marcus Aurelius. Anyways, I got one more question I'm going to challenge Julian Scott on, and then we're going to talk about their great new book, How to Be Self-Reliant in the Music Business. Here's where I'm going to challenge them. This is a quote from a press release. Sometimes press releases get kind of twisted, so maybe this quote is inaccurate. Garbage in the Sand is the opening track of In Echo, the brand new Soft Palms record out next month. Or actually, no, this month, in about a week and a half. It's about the frustration of watching humans destroy the most magical thing in the universe, this planet. Dinosaurs roamed the earth in harmony with nature for 150 million years. I disagree. I think humans are doing a pretty lousy job, but I would not say that animals or nature is in harmony. I would say nature is in permanent warfare. Weeds are always trying to kill other weeds. Animals are always eating other animals. I wouldn't say it's harmony. I would say it's nonstop warfare. So perhaps the reason humans treat the earth so bad is that's what's in their nature, you know, but we could do better. That's my disagreement with your press release.
That's a good point.
It is a good point.
You're right.
They just didn't have plastic byproducts happening.
Yeah.
They
Big.
didn't have Amazon, you know? And
No styrofoam.
yeah, styrofoam and plastic, I think, is the difference. It's like I don't know if there's natural radiation, I guess, from stars, but like radiation and plastic and yeah, there's war, but everything, you know, degrades and gets eaten by other organisms and goes back into the cycle,
Except for plastic and
except for plastic and
styrofoam.
styrofoam.
So yeah, I guess they didn't live in harmony. Maybe that was a wrong. They lived in a symbiotic relationship.
And of course, who was famous for talking about returning to nature and symbiotic relationships? Marcus Aurelius discussed the Meditations to a great
Totally.
extent. So anyway, listen, people, you got to check out this record, man. It's great. Soft Palms in Echo. It's out on June 12th. And check this out. They're going on tour, a big tour in August from
Yes.
San Diego, California, through Santa Fe, New Mexico, to Texas, to New Orleans, to Atlanta, Georgia, to North Carolina, to Silver Spring, Maryland, to Philadelphia the day after my birthday. And I will be there at Niki Lopez in Philadelphia. It's going to be rad. Up to New York,
Amazing.
back down to Virginia, down to Kentucky, to Tennessee, back to Texas. Back to Oklahoma, Colorado, Tennessee, Nevada, and they're wrapping up the tour in the greatest place in the world, Netherlands, which will be fun. So definitely be sure to check out the new Soft Palms record. But we're also going to talk about their book, How to Be Self-Reliant in the Music Business. And people are going to think I'm bullshitting, but I'm not bullshitting. I read this book. It is very dense. It is packed full of invaluable information. If you were in a band, and you don't have some major label taking care of everything for you, you need to read this book. It is extremely dense. And what's better is a lot of these kinds of books are just philosophies, like, oh, always do your best, or blah, blah, blah. It says, oh, you want to press a record? Here's exactly what you need to do to press a record. Oh, do you know what publishing is? Here's exactly what publishing is. Here's exactly how you get your money from publishing. It is an extremely useful guide to bands that don't really know what they're doing. And you know, in my day job, I talk about this all day long. So I'm a little mad that they're selling my entire career for, I don't know, was it $25 or something? So go check out this. I mean, if you were in a band, You definitely should read this book. I am telling you, if you're in a band, people are gonna think I'm bullshitting. I'm not. If you were in a band, this will be the most important book you ever read as a band. I'm dead serious. So Julian Scott, did you write this book because you figured out how to survive in the music industry that's not in, the major label world or whatever? And I'm not even saying major label world is good or bad. Or was it you guys got beat up and you said, oh, we gotta stop getting beat up? What was the genesis of this book?
Yes.
Yeah, all of the above. It kind of centered around the royalties chapter. That's the one that we've been trying to show everyone, like you said, step by step in how to collect your royalties. We figured it out, and we figured out that no one else has ever figured it out. And so we were like, we need to share this information. We can't just like know this and not, because we have a lot of friends that are in bands, and the more we find out that people don't know, the more it kind of motivated to do this stuff. And then we're like, okay, what else can we write down? And we just, it kind of evolved into the book as it is now. But
Yeah, people are, have like always asked us, advice on how to navigate this world because we just have a lot of experience. And then I kind of made a list of like, oh, we could talk about this, could talk about this. And then Scott started filling it in, and it was like, and he, at one point he turned to me, he was like, I think this is a book, and I was like, oh, sick. So, and we just wanted to really make it like concise, yeah, and not too like flowery and not too, because there's each one of these chapters could be their own book. I mean,
definitely true.
this shit gets deep. And so this is like stuff you should know about, and then you can figure out your own pathway to like making it work for you. Because we also don't want to make like concrete rules that you can always break the rules, You just got to know what the rules are.
You gotta know what's gonna like bum people out, like green room etiquette, stuff that like people don't understand because most people, when they start in music, they're operating on stereotypes. So you're operating on like a stereotype, which you do. It's like, okay, what do? I show up and I break everything in the green room, and then I fucking ride a motorcycle through the hotel lobby, and then everything's fine. I get a lot of money. It's like, well, that's not necessarily it. Like, it's like the simplest stuff, like show up on time. Like that, it works better if you're on time, and that is the simplest thing. But I don't think a lot of people think about it like that. Everyone just thinks, hold on, I'll said noon or I'll be there at 5 and I'll be fucking wasted. It's like, well, that's a studio, like that's there's a it's like a business. It doesn't really work like that,
Yeah, and yeah, like you it's good to know this stuff early so you don't burn bridges. Like you don't, then you can like work with people. People will want to work with you and give you opportunities if you pass them on.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, and Scott and Julie are right that the book is very good in how to be in harmony and support, I guess, the world that you're in. But that's not how I viewed the book, and I viewed the book in a self-defense manner, particularly with regards to the rights and that kind of copyright, trademark, and all that kind of. And it's been my experience, and feel free to agree or disagree, over the past, I don't know, 5 years or so, medium-sized independent labels are becoming more and more oppressive in that they want more and more. Whereas back in 10, 15, 20 years ago, we'll say Alternative Tentacle still does this, Discord still does this, is the 50-50 deal. We get the record for 5 years or 10 years or whatever. We put up the cost, we recoup the cost and split everything 50-50. More and more, I'm seeing in my day job mid-level labels and even small ones saying, no, we get the record forever, but you don't realize that because you don't know what you're reading. Do you see that occurring as well? Or what's the trend that you see with regards to, and the second question, and then I'll throw it back to you, is a label even necessary in 2026, 2027?
I don't know how to answer that question because to the first question, do you have fly? I don't know how to answer the first question is I don't know because I don't see every record deal ever. I see a lot of people bummed on how much they don't make, and I see a lot of people not collecting all the royalties. And in a sense, the record deal, I guess it matters slash doesn't matter, but because the money that the label would be keeping are those from the masters. Now, there's more than just the masters to take into consideration when you're talking about a deal. Like, Does the label can't take your songwriting or your publishing most
But they
likely.
have. I've heard now labels taking publishing.
Oh, see,
So
that's good.
that's dirty. I think everyone's panicking because of streaming. Go like, oh, how are we going to make our money back? Because yeah, it's really difficult for mid-level to for working class musicians. It makes it really difficult to be that only that. With streaming, really like just fucked us. And so yeah, I think labels are trying to still be labels by finagling more out of the artist, which, and I have heard of people losing their writing
Bummer.
just from bad contracts and good lawyers finagling that stuff. And like,
Oh
yeah,
yeah,
you're
Billy
right.
Joel, you're right. Yeah,
Yeah.
Billy Joel doesn't he apparently he signed a real bad deal at first and lost all his publishing.
Yeah, I do think that maybe that's happening, and maybe more people are coming into the business that don't know, and they're just happy to sign a contract with a label, and then yeah, they're really bummed. And then what was the second question?
The second
Are
question
labels
is,
necessary?
yeah, necessary
Yeah.
or useful, you know?
I find it helpful working with a label because, like, on both labels that we work with, really smart people. And so that sort of wisdom is something I appreciate, and like helping guide, because I've put out all my the coat hangers and Julia on Suicide Squeeze, and I find that invaluable to me, just because I love working with them. And then JP and Andy from Everloving are like really creatively interesting too, interesting input. So it's no, it's not necessary, but as much support as you can get, because you used to be able to have like a publicist and a manager. I feel like I used to have more of a support system for getting some of these things done and making sure you were, even label assistants, which a lot of labels don't even have that anymore because of money or whatever. So.
And not as much money anymore. But like, yeah, I agree. I do really enjoy working with the people that we're working with because they're really fun to work with, have great ideas and resources and a lot of experience. And it's great. I enjoy it. I think that if you have the chance to, oh, sorry.
Yeah, but I don't think it's necessary. I
It's
think
not
if you
necessary.
read the book and understand all of that and you leverage yourself, like, because basically you have to build up your own audience now anyway, and then you leverage that to get whatever you want. And if it's a label, then yeah.
Well, all of that is why you should get How to Be Self-Reliant in the Music Business. I really can't overstate how extremely useful this book is. And it is like Julie says, every chapter could be a book in of itself. Buy the book. I'm being dead serious. I'm not chill. They didn't pay me to say this.
No,
Actually,
we didn't.
I am paying to see this because I have paid to see both bands and I've enjoyed a great amount. So what I'm saying is buy this book if you're in a band, read it. You might have to, take it in chunks because there's a lot of great information in there. Read the book. I really can't overstate. For a band, it is the most useful book I think you can read. A couple last concrete questions, and then we'll play some music, and then we'll come back and hit some news. Cool thing about Soft Palms and Coat Hangers and some of Julie's other stuff, including the Coat Hangers demos that she released about 2 years ago, is there's a handmade element. And in fact, there's a handmade element for the new Soft Palms In Echo record. There's a gold rainbow foil CD, and there's a silver rainbow foil CD with a hand-stamped CD jacket. A, should I get the gold one or the silver one? And B, is what, the Melvins, the Dwarves also have taken great advantage of making handmade records, which the fans really enjoy. What is the handmade element to you?
Oh, it's everything. It kind of makes it so you're buying a piece of art, and instead of a machine-made thing. But like, we printed the inserts or blacklight inserts, and it's also partly fun. We make all our own t-shirts. Scotty, what do you think?
I love it. Yeah, everything is handmade. Like we recorded the whole thing ourselves here. We wrote and recorded and did the art, did the design, printed the inserts, and
And you should get the gold.
yeah, maybe gold. They're both cool.
If you were to choose one, 'cause neither one is going to be in stores. The ones
Ah.
that the label puts out is gonna not be foil at all. It's just like a print of a, it's like pinky purpley. So these are very,
Yeah, these are the
the artists only, artists exclusive, which I also recommend bands do.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, and while I ask them my last two questions, if you have any questions, feel free to jump in. But as I ask them my last two questions, I am literally buying the gold foil CD right now as I talk to them.
Oh,
So,
thanks a lot,
Scott,
man.
do you remember, and you might not remember, do you remember the Growlers Johnny Brenda's show with the Garden, where the Garden Brothers jumped up on the balcony and jumped off? That was a crazy show for both the Garden and the Growlers. Do you remember that show?
I do remember that show, yeah. I love Johnny Brenda's. That's really cool.
Okay, well,
That's all I
that,
got for you though. I
and
don't,
then,
yes, but the answer is yes, but that's really all I have to add to this, right? Because,
well, fair enough.
yeah.
Julia, do you remember the coat hanger show that was really weird? It was at the Electric Factory, and it was like 3 p.m. and it was like Red Bull presents like the coat hangers or something. Or do you remember that show?
Did it smell like poo?
It probably did. It was the Electric Factory.
I remember a show in the afternoon that really was strongly influenced by poo smell.
Well, I'll tell you, people, what is not influenced by Poo Spell is the record I just bought, In Echo
Sweet.
by Soft Palms. You should check it out now. We're gonna play. And do you have any songs, or should we play a track and come back and hit the news?
Sure. What part of the record and what part of the book are both of you most proud of?
The completion of the record, and really the completion of the book. I think it's just the whole thing, 'cause yeah, that's a great question. I don't know.
I think because it took us so long to figure out the royalties chapter is my the thing I'm most proud of, because it really like it has like charts, you know, to make you understand what's happening with music publishing. And for the record, yeah, I'm happy that it's done, and I'm happy we wrote all those things. Like, you know, I'm like st super stoked on the songwriting.
I'm happy there's no covers on the record. I'm getting really tired of cover songs. They're everywhere, and it's just like enough. I think that's something I'm very, I mean, not that it gets cover songs, but I'm just really happy there's no cover songs on this record. That's just me. There was one more thing. Oh yeah, royalties. The royalties chapter is on howtobeselfreliant.com for everybody. Incomplete. I mean, it's complete, not incomplete.
Yeah,
It's
it's
complete.
for free for people.
Yeah, for
Well,
everyone.
any everyone, you could just go.
Well, there you have it. That's Soft Palms talking about the new record and the new book. In Echo is the new book. How to Be Self-Reliant in the Music Industry is the In Echo is the new record. How to Be Self-Reliant in the Music Industry is the new book. We're gonna play another Soft Palms track, and then we'll come back and talk about what sort of is a cover. We'll see how Scott likes it. This is Nervous as Hell by Soft Palms, and we'll be right back. we're back, and we're going to give Julie and Scott a minute to take a little bit of a break. Scal, who is everyone's darling right now, because they're a great band. They are a little bit on hiatus, and actually, there's a pretty revealing interview with Kat Moss of Scal with, I think it was the Santa Cruz Weekly, where she says Scal is not done, but they're on a hiatus, and she was feeling a little bit worn out and exhausted from the past year and a half of Scal's touring and the big record, Are We All Angels, which received a lot of hype and was on under a lot of people's microscope. So, kind of out of the blue, Scal has released a remix of "Whip It" by Devo, and a lot of people are saying it's a cover, but I actually don't think it's a cover. I think it's a remix in the hip hop sense that the musical bed is still essentially the same, and they had Kat sing new vocals over the top. And well, first of all, I think this version is really cool. I think Scal is really cool. But I think more. I wish more rock bands would do hip hop style remixes, and that, maybe leave like the first third of the vocals in, and then have another guest vocalist come in, or maybe do some trippy stuff with the instrumental on the on you know on the bed of the music. I think more rock bands should remix rock tunes and not in a hip hop style. That is not make put like a beat under it, but like do the things where they'll take out the vocals, put in new vocals, maybe put a new riff on. And actually, now I think about it, the Coat Hangers did just that with Down Down on the Weekend and the corresponding EP, Captain's Dead. So how you like that? So we'll talk about Joy with that in a second. But M, the new Scal remix of Devo, and actually, well, I just got back from Vegas, and I'll tell my Mark Motherbog story real quick again, because Mark Motherbog is weird and he's cool as hell. And that Black Guy of the Doors was doing an acoustic show. The drummer of the Doors for a while, and kind of still is Josh Fries. Josh Fries, also drummer for Devo. I'm sitting at the table. Josh Fries comes and sits down, and who's there with him? But none other than Mark Mothersbaugh. Then I see Black Daddy do an acoustic set. During the set, Mark Mothersbaugh kept getting up and trying to turn off the TVs in the bar. He took a cup and put $1 in it and put it in front of Black Dahlia. And after the show was over, I said, "Mark, I interviewed you for Rolling Stone." And he goes, "I remember that. You gave me a terrible review, a terrible review." I said, "No, I didn't. I gave you a good review." And he's like, "I was just testing you. I was just testing you." So Mark Mothersbaugh, a real gem. M, what's your stance on Devo, Mark Mothersbaugh, and the Scal remix of probably what is Devo's biggest hit, Whip It?
I like Devo. I think they're cool. I found out probably like 2 weeks ago there's a local pizza place that has a Devo inspired pizza, and I'm trying to like figure out how to I was trying to find pictures of it online and I can't, so I think I'm just gonna have to buy it. But it's like a potato pizza and everything, so it's pretty cool. I love hearing all the Mark Mothersbaugh stories. I think he'd be a really interesting person to meet one day and just see how he is. And then with this, I agree, it's definitely a remix. It's not a cover credit in that sense, and I think it sounds really good. It's an interesting, like, it's a cool way to hear a song where it's not completely redone, but like certain elements are, and everything's like mixed and mingled and like married together. So I was a big fan of this. Going in, I wasn't sure what it was going to sound like. I thought it was going to kind of be like the Psychic Dance Routine remix, but I really liked it.
Julia, how does it feel to be a pioneer of the rock hip hop style remix? How does that feel?
Great. Yeah, it feels really good. I love it. I like when people remix. I love remixes. We did another Arthritis Sucks remix. Judy Chicago did like a dance version, and then Dan Deacon did a remix. We had like a remix 7-inch. So I'm super into remixes and like taking the stems. I guess it's like what you're talking about is a combo cover remix.
It's a
So
collaboration.
collab.
A collab.
Yeah, it's cool. I haven't
Now,
heard it, but I'm sure it's cool.
Scott, you're an audio engineer. Where do you stand on remixes? Where do you stand on? And actually, another question. Well, I'm going a little bit off the range, but the latest. Well, we won't use Scott as an example. Modern production is very produced, and I think a lot of modern records are overproduced. But maybe that's just me. How do you feel about that, Scott? And how do you feel about the concept of remix?
I love remixes. I love techno. I think that's awesome. I think everything everyone does is awesome. I don't know. There's how many 5 million songs released every day, and like how many of those do we actually hear? And I think the ones that we actually hear are the ones that have the most money behind them. Therefore, they're going to be the ones that try to appeal to the most people. Therefore, they're going to be the most clean. That's just kind of the way it is. But I don't know. There's so much to work with out there. And there's so many people doing so much different stuff. It's really hard to kind of generalize, like it down to one thing. I don't know. It's almost an impossible question to answer. I enjoy when people like doing what they're doing. I always try to, like in the book, it says that recording is cooler than music, because in my opinion, it is. And it's cool for people to be adopting that art form and discovering it, because music is cool, but recording is cooler. And that makes me happy. It makes me happy that more people are doing it.
Yeah, and hopefully they're figuring things out, like as far as production. I think everyone's trying to imitate a clean sound. And then if you like even current like punk bands, they want to sound clean, and it's like that's not punk, but you want to kind of hear some dirt, and that's kind of what I don't know, to me sounds punk. But I think maybe it's a mindset of like competition, because they'll tell you like you gotta master your stuff really loud so it'll compete. But old stuff wasn't that loud. It was just cool. So.
And maybe people aren't going for, it's like, I don't know if anyone's put out another album that sounds like Let It Bloom. Like, that takes,
It's like
it's
risky.
risky. Like, and I don't know if people are that into taking risks. I don't know.
And I don't think the introduction of AI-assisted recording
No.
helps at all. So, like, maybe if people get more interested in, doing the opposite of that, which I think we're on the crest of. Like, the young people I see are like super anti-AI and anti-social media, and so I think we're about to see maybe some kind of artistry infiltrate the recording medium.
Well, let's talk about AI. I've got very strong feelings about this. The greatest band of all time, the Rolling Stones, released a new record called Foreign Tongues. I gotta say, Rolling Stones, greatest bands of all time. Since Steel Wheels, their album titles have not been great, aside from Blue and Lonesome. And it feels like a marketing committee gives them their album titles. Bridges to Back, like Voodoo Lounge. Like, what's a voodoo? Like, if we look at their old titles, Sticky Fingers, Let It Bleed, Exile on Main Street, Tattoo You, like, Some Girls, like, those are cool names, It's like, no, Voodoo Lounge, Bridges to Babylon, A Bigger Bang. I don't even know what that is. Anyway, the new record is called Foreign Tongues. It's produced by Andrew Watt. I'm not a huge fan of his production style. I think he's too poppy for the Rolling Stones, but that's beside the point. They put out a couple of songs, Rolling Stones, greatest band of all time, always will be, one of the greatest live bands of all time, always will be. The two songs released so far, okay. I don't love them. I don't hate them. I think they're okay. However, they put out a video called In the Stars. Here's where things get a little weird. Of all people, the South Park guys, Trey Stone and Matt Parker, no, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, rather, used their technology to de-age the Rolling Stones. Well, actually, they had body actors to take the place of the Rolling Stones, and then they used AI to paint the faces to look like the Rolling Stones did. And I would say 75. Five, I'm saying, it looks like it's only rock and roll era Stones, and so, but where it gets kind of weird is the song is a new song, and particularly Mick Jagger's voice is modern Mick Jagger's voice, not Mick Jagger 1975. Both good voices, but definitely different voices. So if you watch the video, it sort of looks like young Mick Jagger with a old Mick Jagger voice, and it doesn't even fit the body, so that's a little odd. But further, if you really watch the video, the faces aren't quite right, which is kind of weird. Like, it looks like Mick Jagger, but not exactly like Mick Jagger. And where it gets weird, and I'm surprised the technology didn't catch this, there's lots of fundamental errors in the video. Like, if you watch the video, for whatever reason, at one point, Rod Stewart or Rod Stewart's Cybo clone is in the background mimicking Mick Jagger's body movements for some reason. And at another point, there's like 30 drummers in the background, which is like AI just said, oh, I need to fill up the background, I'll put drummers in it. So this did not get really good reviews anywhere, especially with the populace, I think, especially with the Rolling Stones fans, except for the diehards that will, I mean, I'm diehard, but anyways, so I think this was a misfire for the Rolling Stones, and I was disappointed to see the Rolling Stones do this. If anything, by seeing young Mick Jagger sings old Mick Jagger, that only points a finger to how old they are. Whereas if they pulled a David Lee Roth or a Glenn Danzig and just said, "I'm fucking Glenn Danzig," and not say, "I'm old Glenn Danzig, I'm Glenn Danzig, screw you." You know, you're like, wow, that's Glenn Danzig, you know, or Robert Plant, who I saw not that long ago. He looks older, but you're like, oh my God, that's Robert Plant. You know, he's not like, I'm an old guy. He's like, I'm Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin. You're like, holy shit, that's Robert Plant. And he looks like Robert Plant. Mick and Keith still look like Mick and Keith, unlike perhaps some other older performers where you're like, who's that up there on stage? They don't need to be ashamed of how they look. If anything, the Rolling Stones, who are blues aficionados, should lean into that. Like B.B. King, like Muddy Waters, like Howling Wolf. Don't be scared. And if you really are scared of that, then put yourself in the video and have younger people dancing in front of you in the video or something like that. You know what I mean? I think this was a misfire. And it's concerning to me how many people are so quick to jump on the AI. But I'm also confused as, you know, Mick is usually pretty tasteful in that Mick's not dumb. Mick knows how to handle the Rolling Stones brand. This was a misfire, and I was surprised that Mick would do that. M, what's your take on the video? Were you surprised that Mick made this choice? And were you off put by how it kind of looks like Mick, but not exactly? And it's almost like Mick's messed up clone from like Alien 3 or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, what'd you think of the video and the song? I love the Rolling Stones, my favorite band. I give the song B minus.
I hated this. I didn't get through the whole thing, so I didn't see the 30 drummers.
It's weird.
But it's yeah, the amount that I did watch was really off-putting, and like I don't want to interact with AI stuff. I try to steer as clear from it as like I can. There have been a few things that have like slipped through the cracks, or it's just like it looks too real, and I don't know until later or whatever. But this was awful. And then I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, since it's the South Park guys, is it supposed to be bad? Do you know what I mean? Like, is it supposed to, are they trying to make a point, or is it just, it's just bad and that's it, you know, and kind of leave it at that. Waste of water.
You know what would have been better, and you just brought it up, is what if the video was just the Rolling Stones in South Park animation style? That would be so much better.
Dude, that would
That'd
rule.
be
Yeah.
Cool. Julian Scott, the Rolling Stones, what do you think of them in general? What do you think of this song? What do you think of the video? What do you think of AI being used to make fake Rolling Stones for our entertainment?
It doesn't come as a surprise. The Rolling Stones are great. Their old stuff kicks ass because of what it was recorded with. That was it just sounds cool. And regardless of how much I like a band, I'm with M, and as soon as they include AI, I'm not interested at all. I keep AI out of my life. Both of us, our whole lives are AI free. Never used it. Don't plan on it. Don't see the point. Don't think it's beneficial. And yeah, sorry, Rolling Stones, but I don't care.
I agree. No AI, especially for that. Like, if we can use it, AI to clean up the oceans from plastic trash, I would be into it. But yeah, you're right. Like, why wouldn't they just animate it? And they probably were trying to be funny. So maybe that's a huge fail too, if no one caught the humor or the irony. Yeah.
I'm just imagining how much of a viral thing it would have been is if they, you know, they do the South Park thing where they take a real picture of their face and put it on like
Yeah.
the construction vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been like awesome. You know what I mean?
Awesome.
Like,
Yeah.
Mick, listen, Mick, you need to hire us as consultants, not whoever you're using. But listen, here's another band that's back, and their new song is perhaps somewhat challenging, somewhat different than their earlier oeuvre, if you will. Downtown Boys, you got a new song out. It's called Serena. It's off the upcoming album, Public Luxury, out June 26 via Sub Pop. M, I know you're a Downtown Boys fan. I'm a fan. What you think of this song, Serena? And is this about Serena Williams or something else? I didn't read the lyrics that closely, honestly.
Oh, I think it's about something else. I think Serena Williams is without an I.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. I liked the song. The other, I think they have one other single from the album out so far. Is that right? They have two other singles out so far, and I've liked all three. This one is very different, and I like the you don't know exactly kind of what you're getting into, which I think is really fun and makes it like a really cool way to listen to things. Because it's like, it's not just the same thing. It's like, oh, this is like going in this direction, or this is going in this direction. I also really liked the video for it, and like how bright everything is. and all the colors. So I'm very excited for this album.
Julian Scott, are you familiar with Downtown Boys? Are you not familiar? And if not, what's a new band that you think people should check out?
I'll definitely check out Downtown Boys. Sounds great. But I can't think of a band off the top of my head.
There's a band from here called Sleepers,
Sleepers.
from Long Beach, and a band called Ugg from LA. Super sick bands. Yeah, those are. Oh, well, I love Lael Neal. We played a show, or we went to a show. She's, not new, but live, she's very mesmerizing. So, there's.
And Animal Self too, Julia's new project with Kareem and Cody.
Oh yeah, I'm in a new band. We just had practice right before the
That
podcast.
that's right.
Oh.
Somebody that's right. He so they don't have to talk, but I heard this. I think it was a Conan Neutron podcast. Cody of the Melvins is in a band with Julia, and there's a secret third member. Can you reveal the third members, or you can't?
Oh, I didn't know it was secret.
Oh, maybe it's not secret.
As yeah, I don't think it's secret. Maybe they were just playing it up. It's Kareem. Joseph, well, Kareem, he played in the Locust and played in Murder City, so
Well,
he's
there
the
you have
third
it.
member.
And speaking of Titanic collaborations, Sting and Shaggy are in a musical together. And I'm sure Julian Scott, like, why are we talking about Sting and Shaggy? Here's why. 20 some years ago, or was it 20? Yeah, 20 years ago, I was at Penn State College. I paid $12 to see Sting. It was Sting Does All Police. I was so excited because I love the Police then. I like them now. I love them then. I'm like, yes, $12 to see Sting do All Police. I can't wait. This is going to be great. I go in, I sit down. And for the next 2 hours, I was astounded at how bored I was. I've never been so bored by a concert in my entire life. But I refused to leave because A, it was $12. And it was like maybe something good will happen. Like Sting took the most catchy songs of all time and made them so insanely boring. Like Roxanne was, Roxanne, you don't have to turn off the red light. It was like, Roxanne, you don't have to turn off the red light. I distinctly remember sitting with my head in my hands. Bored, almost literally to how bored I was at Sting. I couldn't believe how bored. And for 20 years, I'm like, Sting is terrible live. So, and everyone I met, I'd be like, don't go see Sting. He's boring. Don't bother and waste your time. And then I went to see Marcia Griffiths of the Wailers, of course, amazing singer, at some weird festival. And the headliners was Sting and Shaggy. And I'm like, well, I'll just leave before Sting and Shaggy. But I'm like, you know what? I'm like, you know what? That's so unexpected. I don't say ridiculous, unexpected that I'll stay for Sting and Shaggy and I'll laugh at how ridiculous it is. Well, I stayed for Sting and Shaggy, and Sting and Shaggy was awesome. Shaggy is the element that Sting needs to make his songs good again. They were energetic, they were fast, and most of the songs had Sting doing his songs and then Shaggy coming in doing like a dance hall thing on the second half of the songs. Sting and Shaggy is legitimate. I don't mean ironically, I mean Sting and Shaggy is freaking great. So you would watch this trailer to the musical about Sting's hometown, like losing their boating industry, and Shaggy shows up and saves the day or something like that. And I would go see this if this was in town. I would go see Sting and Shaggy in a musical together, singing about saving Sting's boating industry hometown. So I'm going to go to the Julian Scott first. Would you go see the Sting and Shaggy musical? Do you enjoy the Police? Do you enjoy Shaggy? What do you think of unexpected collaborations like this? And do you think this collaboration is simply because Sting and Shaggy have the same manager, and he's like, I need to generate some heat for both these artists.
That sounds awesome. I would be stoked, especially if I could pay $12 to go see it. That'd be it's actually Sting and actually Shaggy.
It's Sting from the Police and Shaggy from Jamaica in a
Wow.
musical singing about English boating towns in like 1955 or something, and like Sting is sad because the boating town is closing down. And Shaggy shows up smoking a pipe, and he like figures out how to save the boating town.
That's so cool.
That's
That
insane.
sounds
If
awesome.
that's true, like, wow.
Does
Yeah,
it
I
feel
would
like,
go.
oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I
Does it
think
feel
I
like
would
AI
go.
wrote that script, even though AI did not write that script?
Yeah, how did that happen? I don't know. Wow.
It sounds like
Maybe
there was
it's.
coke involved.
Should we ridicule Sting for taking on such a ridiculous endeavor, or should we applaud him for spreading his wings and trying something daring and new for him?
Oh,
Or
applaud.
is this an ego trip where Sting, like, I can do whatever I want. You know, like when Michael Jordan decided to play baseball, or when Glenn Danzig, one of my favorites, decided to make movies without any assistance from anybody else. Is it an ego trip and not a bold artistic decision?
I think it's great. Whatever it is, it doesn't sound cocky or egotistical at all. It sounds awesome, actually. I don't know. I love everything about it. It's like the best thing I've heard all day.
I'm going to throw the question to Em, but I want Julian Scott to think about if they could collaborate with one artist, we'll say alive or dead, who would they collaborate? I'll give you two. I'll give you like the real one, like the cool one, like, you know, like, I don't know, like Jimi Hendrix or whoever. But then also one like Stig and Shaggy, unexpected, but perhaps interesting. So I'll let you two think about that. And Em, would you go see Sting and Shaggy the musical?
I would 100% go see Sting and Shaggy the musical. I want to know what this is. I want to know how the music sounds.
Well, Em, I've got bad news for you. It looks like ticket sales are very, very poor because my Facebook and Instagram is getting blasted with ads, and Sting is like doing all these, like whenever like an artist will be like, come see me at so and so, it means tickets probably are not doing that well. So, Em, if you want to see this, it's only like 6 days, so you probably should be getting to New York during that 6 day span.
Amazing.
I'll get on my ship and head over.
So Julian Scott, who is our pick? And we got one final story, then we'll wrap this up. Who is your pick for you? Who would you like to collaborate with in a genuine style? And who would you like to collaborate with in a daring style?
I would choose Outkast. Outkast, if they could get back together and collaborate with us in any way, I would be so stoked. They're the sickest. I don't know about a dead person. You
Dead.
could
There's a
pick
lot of
a
dead
dead person.
people that I'd love to collaborate. You mean
Who?
like musically?
Yeah, pick one.
In any context, it's free reign,
Oh man.
freestyle.
Good question.
What about that producer dude?
Oh, who?
I don't know.
Bill Spector.
No, that would be insane.
Yeah.
I would sit out on that
That'd
one.
be insane. Like feels like why is your jacket so big? Like, oh, I don't have a bulletproof vest on. That's not what I have on, you
Yeah.
know. So but
Bulletproof face mask.
good producer, you know,
Crazy
lousy
person.
lousy gun holder, if you will.
Yeah.
So anyways, so yeah, let's do one last story. The Circle Jerks were playing, was it their hometown? Let's see, Circle Jerks were playing Las Vegas, not their
Las
hometown,
Vegas.
about 3 days before I was there. And there was two MAGA dudes in the front. And actually this actually goes back to punk. So actually let's rewind a little bit. Last year was punk rock balling in Las Vegas. There was no punk rock balling this year, quite sadly, but had there been one, it would have been this very weekend that we're talking about the Circle Jerks show. So last year, some MAGA dude, actually they were MAGA, but they were, believe it or not, MAGA plus. They were neo-Nazi bikers showed up in their colors at punk rock bowling. And to the punk rockers' credit, they chased them out of punk rock bowling and even punched them. I'm on the fence on whether or not I approve of that the punching. I think I don't, you know, if there's not if it's not response to violence, I think I don't approve that. But that being said, the punk rockers said, we don't want neo-Nazi MAGA dudes at punk rock bowling. Get out. You're not welcome here. Well, almost, actually, maybe a year to the day, perhaps, Circle Jerks were playing Las Vegas. And two MAGA dudes showed up with Circle Jerks records in their hand. And they wanted the show to stop so Keith Morris could sign their record. And Keith said, I'm not going to stop the show to sign your records. And I love Keith and that he's an old school punker. And Keith's a nice guy. He's a good guy, but he's not that nice. Like some musicians are like, oh, I'm your pal. Let's get out, let's hang out and have a drink. And yeah, I'll hug you. And you know, you'll say I'm a good guy. Like, that's not Keith. Keith is an old school punk rocker. If you catch him in the wrong hour, you might get a little sass, which, you know, he's the function of Keith Morris is not to be your friend. The function of Keith Morris is to be Keith Morris, which is why he's a national treasure. And so he's like, I'm not going to sign your records. And then they called him a traitor. And then Keith, and this is what I've been waiting for someone to hear. This is what I've been waiting to hear someone to say to all these quote so-called MAGA punkers. Keith is like, have you ever read any of our lyrics ever? How do you jive that with what we're talking about ever? And then Keith did a Keith is a walking, he does about a 5 minute stand-up routine off the top, which is one of the most funniest things ever. He's like, how dare you call me a traitor? I voted in every election and I always vote for the least stinkiest pile of shit that I can find. And so Keith very much doesn't go rah, rah, rah politics, but I think he holds true to at least his or fundamental punk values. And the guys were like flipping off Keith, and eventually they got chased out of the venue or they left the venue or whatever. And the circle jerks continued onward. So Keith, when it counted, Keith, and actually I believe when it counted, Keith stood up to the plate. I did see some old school punk rockers. I won't necessarily name them because I don't want to drag them into the fray, but some old school punk rockers that I respect saying, well, punk is the free expression place. I think what they're saying is lame, but if that's how they want to express themselves at the show, it's punk rock. It is the free expression zone. So we do have kind of two contradicting forces here. On one hand, we've got the Fugazi, the crass mindset that is like, no, punk rock means anti-racism, anti-sexism, blah, blah, blah. And on the other force, we say punk rock is the freedom of expression zone. And we're in conflict here. Keith Morris kind of quite clearly chose a side here, which I was maybe a little surprised that he chose that side, but maybe he chose that side because they were being a dick to him and flipping him off. And so, Em, I'm going to throw it to you. How do you feel about that conflict? But also, Em, how do these MAGA guys rationale? Is that a word? Rationale? I don't know if that's a. I don't know if I'm
Yeah,
using that word correctly. How do
I
they
don't think
reason?
so.
How do they reason? I'm punk rock and I support Donald Trump. I just don't see that. I don't see that functioning under Dead Kennedys. I don't see it functioning under Crass. I don't see it functioning under the Germs. I don't see it functioning under Black Flag, Discharge. I don't even see it functioning under Green Day. You know what I mean? So how did I don't even see it functioning under Blink 182, who I can't stand. How do they work that out in their brain? And then you could say they might. You could say they're like, well, they just want to listen to the music, man. But then they're asking for Keith's autograph. So what's going on there, Em? Be our resident psychiatrist. Cut open that skull and let us know what's going on with them. What is going on? And did Keith Morris choose the right maneuver?
Keith Morris 100% chose the right maneuver, and I think these guys got off easy for just being escorted out or leaving. I don't think there's any place for like this in the punk scene. Like, if you're, kind of defending fascism, this isn't the place for you at all. And it's wild that we have to kind of talk about that, but yeah, as to what makes people think that this light or liking punk and supporting like Donald Trump and stuff are copacetic, I have no idea. I would like to know because it blows my mind every time like I see it, and it's just like, how are you doing this? Like the music that you like and the lifestyle that you subscribe to as like a punk is against everything that this person party stands for. How are you saying that they're like going together? Again, it's going back to the Keith Morris line, like, do you understand your fucking lyrics? And I think the answer is no, or that they've never paid attention to it. Because like when Rage Against the Machine, a lot of their, or not a lot, but like some of their fans were
A
like
significant portion,
super,
a significant portion,
yeah,
for sure.
were like super mega, and it was like, well, how are you, these are two opposite sides here. What are you doing? So I would like to know. I'd like to crack open the brain and see what goes on.
Emma, I just blew my mind. At the punk rock bowling show, guess what band was playing when the neo-Nazi bikers showed up?
Was it oh no,
It was
Circle
Flag,
Jerks?
Keith Morris
Yeah, I was gonna
again.
say Flag.
That's trippy,
Yeah.
isn't it? That's
Yeah.
trippy. That's weird. Julian Scott, how do you feel about this story? How do you feel about Keith's stance? And ha there is a somewhat significant MAGA or even racist portion of the punk rock scene. How does that work? How does that make any sense at all?
Well, it's rooted to what they were. I mean, there's a few different perspectives. It's like, okay, you got a couple dudes trying to stop the show to sign a record. It's like, well, that's not going to work. And then you have people showing up, obviously, to get the type of attention that they want to get. They're just out there looking to be in fights. I mean, take the labels out of it. Like, this is just classic behavior. People going wanting to get in fights with people. It really kind of has nothing to do with MAGA, even though that tends to be a little more kind of meatheady or whatever. It's just people feeling like they're with their friends, and like you're not going to see a single MAGA person. You know what I mean? It's like this isn't one person's thing. It's like a bunch of people that feel safe with each other, and they're kind of feeding off each other, and that's the thing. And the problem that I have with it is they just need better friends, like, and more friends. Like, you don't, I don't know. That's the shame, is that if they had people around them that were like kind of more accepting and weren't, and were like, dude, that's not cool. And they were alone, I think it'd be a different story. I don't think one person's gonna show up and be like, hey, it's all about me right now. I'm gonna fucking piss everyone off. No, it's like, well, it's gonna be at least two people.
I think MAGA co-opted the punk sort of ideas in their selling to the people. Like it was punk to be MAGA because you're going against the left. You know, this is like fucking twisted, but that's how it. I saw that in like older people were like, oh yeah, I'm like punk because I'm against masks and I'm against people telling me what to do. It's like, wait, that no. You're misunderstanding what that is. So maybe when they're listening to the lyrics, they are thinking from their perspective instead of what the person's actually talking about. So I think that's how they're able to like feel like they could be part of it because I'm punk and you know I don't like people telling me what to do. But it's like, well, that's, I don't know.
Yeah,
doesn't add up. But yeah, I do. I've seen that happen.
Julian Scott, rank them up. Keith, Ron, Des Henry, 1 through 4.
Keith, Ron, Des Henry.
Yeah, there you go. I love Keith, though. I like his response. I think he kept it like fucking clever and truthful and entertaining for the people. So, what else do you want?
What
Yeah.
else do you want? Well, here's what the people want. They want the new Soft Palms record. It's out real soon. It's out June 19. It's called In Echo. There's a whole bunch of cool versions you get. And if you go on their Bandcamp, you can get the super fancy foil record version, which is super cool. And you can also check out this very, so that's the fun. You should get that for fun and artistic enjoyment. And for education, get How to Be Self-Reliant in the Music Business. If you are in a band, if you are thinking about being in a band, if you want to do music, even if you want to do art, check out that book. It is extremely useful. So you got the fun and the homework, and both will enrich you and reward you immensely. Julia and Scott, any closing words you want the listeners to know? Anything you want them to think about? Anything you want them to ponder?
Yeah.
Don't litter.
Don't litter. Litter bad.
Don't litter with your words. Don't litter with your actions. Like, it's time for us all to start cleaning up the litter and being responsible.
Where they have it, people reduce, reuse, recycle, and listen to Radio, the new song off In Echo by Soft Palms. And Julian Scott, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank
Thank you
you.
so much. That was fun.
Yeah.